All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we are going deep, deep down into the world of molecular machines.
Ooh, I like that. Deep.
We're talking about the tiniest machines imaginable. Seriously. Like teeny tiny engines, but made out of, you guessed it, molecules.
It really is mind-blowing, isn't it, when you think about it? Machines so small that you need an electron microscope, a really, really powerful one, just to see them.
It's kind of hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they aren't put together with gears and pistons and all those parts we think of with regular machines. These are, well, molecules that move and do specific things. It's like chemistry in action.
You know, I bet you everyone listening already runs into these molecular machines all the time without even knowing it,
right?
Especially when it comes to medicine.
Really? I'm all ears.
Well, let's take lovastatin, for example.
That cholesterol drug.
That's the one. You know, it comes from a fungus, actually. And what it does is it blocks a certain enzyme that's all about making cholesterol. It's like a targeted attack at the molecular level.
Hmm. I never thought about it that way. So it's not just the drug itself. It's about how it works on like a super tiny scale.
Exactly. And there are so many other examples. Metformin for diabetes. It comes from the French lilac, believe it or not. Helps your body use insulin better. And then there's ivermectin. Super powerful against parasites. And guess what? It starts out in the soil. Each of these, they're all molecular machines designed to work on specific things in our bodies.
So it's like our bodies are packed with these crazy, intricate, tiny machines that are always running, keeping us going.
I love that way of putting it. And what's really amazing is that we've only just scratched the surface. Think back to the Nobel Prize a few years back. 2016, if I remember correctly.
For chemistry. It rings a bell.
Like, for chemistry. Three incredible scientists, Savage, Stoddard, and Feringa, made these amazing discoveries about making molecular machines that could be controlled.
You mean like move in specific ways? On purpose?
Exactly. Like tiny molecules doing a little dance, rotating, lifting, bending, all on command. It's incredible.
So what does that mean for, say, medicine down the line?
Yeah. Well, one area that's really exciting is nanomedicine. Think even tinier microscopic machines that can deliver drugs precisely where they're needed in the body.
So no more like blasting the whole body with a drug when only a little part needs it. Sort of like directly targeting, say, cancer cells, but leaving the healthy cells alone.
You got it. It could totally change how we treat diseases. Fewer side effects, better results.
Sounds like something out of Star Trek. But hold on, how do you even power something that small? Are we talking micro batteries or something?
Well, researchers are coming up with some very clever ways to power these things. And one that really fascinates me is light-powered motion.
So, like, tiny solar panels?
Not exactly solar panels, but similar. There are certain molecules, and this is wild, they literally change shape when light hits them. And the shape-shifting is what allows them to get this walk.
Walk. Hold on. Like, these molecules have legs. I'm pitching little molecule legs now.
Not legs in the way we think about them. It's more like a carefully controlled series of steps, all powered by light energy. It's a bit like how plants use sunlight for photosynthesis. Instead of converting light into chemical energy, they convert light into motion.
Okay, my brain is officially fried. So if we can steer these molecules with light, does that mean we could like build stuff at a molecular level?
Now you're thinking like a scientist. That's exactly what researchers are excited about, molecular factories. Imagine tiny machines inside our cells that could put together complicated structures, repair damaged tissues, or even make completely new materials, and all at a scale that's just, well, mind-blowing.
That's insane. It's like nanotechnology on steroids.
You could say that. And this is just one tiny example of the incredible potential that molecular machines have.
I am totally hooked. This is wild. But, you know, I got to ask, what does this mean for me, the average person? Like, how might all this nanomedicine stuff actually change healthcare in the future?
Well, let me paint a picture for you. Imagine a future where instead of going through invasive surgery or taking meds with nasty side effects, you get a simple injection, right? And those are tiny machines that go straight to the problem and fix it at a cellular level.
So we're talking potentially curing diseases that are incurable today, growing new tissue, maybe even slowing down aging.
Those are all very real possibilities, and researchers are working on them right now. Molecular machines could completely change healthcare as we know it, but it's not just about medicine. These tiny machines, they could revolutionize almost everything. The stuff we make, the energy we use, everything.
Okay, so this isn't just sci-fi fantasy. It's a peek into a future that's not as far off as we might think. But before we get too carried away, let's break down how these molecular machines actually do their thing.
Sounds like a plan. Let's dive into the nitty-gritty and figure out what makes these little engines tick.
I'm ready. I have a feeling this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the amazing world of molecular machines.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it. You know, nature has been using these molecular machines for, like, forever, billions of years. Our bodies are like this living proof of how incredible these tiny systems are. So complex, so efficient.
So we're, like, trying to catch up, right? Looking at nature's designs and trying to make our own synthetic versions.
Exactly. Like apprentices, learning from the master. Take the example of a molecular motor. They're these protein complexes, and they have this incredible ability to convert chemical energy into actual mechanical work.
Okay, hold up. Break that down for me. How does a molecule actually do work? I mean, it's not like they have tiny little muscles or anything.
Okay, so picture this. You have this tiny protein molecule, right? And it changes shape when it bumps into a molecule like ATP, which is like the energy currency of our cells. So when the shape change happens, the protein can move, like it can walk along a track or even spin like a wheel. And all these tiny movements, they power so many important things in our bodies. Muscles contracting, cells dividing, even transporting stuff within cells. It's mind-blowing.
It really is. I mean, who knew that all these tiny motions were doing so much heavy lifting?
It's incredible, right? And that same principle, turning chemical energy into motion, that's what scientists are working on with synthetic molecular machines.
So we're talking about building artificial systems that can, like, mimic what biology does naturally, but, like, way more efficiently.
Precisely. And the applications go way beyond medicine. Imagine materials that can repair themselves, just like living tissue does. Like, what if we could make self-healing polymers based on how our bodies heal wounds?
Okay, now that would be a game changer. Does that mean no more cracked phone screens? Sign me up.
Maybe one day. But think bigger. What about clothes that change with the temperature? Or buildings that could adjust their structure to, like, survive an earthquake? It could totally change how we think about functionality and resilience in materials.
So we're not just copying biology. We're using those same ideas to design totally new stuff, new tech.
Exactly. By understanding these molecular machines at their core, we can design synthetic systems that can do things we can only dream of with regular materials.
This is getting me pumped. So we have self-healing stuff, adaptive structures. What else is out there?
Well, let's talk about climate change. What if we had molecular machines that could grab carbon dioxide and turn it into something useful? Imagine actually cleaning up the atmosphere by turning pollution into something we can use.
Now, that's what I call hitting two birds with one stone. But how do we even control these machines? Do we need to create, like, a molecular programming language or something?
Well, it's not quite a programming language like we know it. But scientists are working on ways to control these machines from the outside, using stuff like light, heat, or chemical signals to trigger specific actions. It's fascinating.
So we're figuring out how to speak the language of molecules to give them directions.
That's a great way to put it. And the better we get at that, the more complex systems we can build. Imagine networks of these machines all working together, just like the intricate systems in our own bodies.
So hold on. We're building tiny armies of molecular robots, each with its own little job to do. And that's how we get to those molecular factories you were talking about earlier.
You're catching on quickly. Creating those molecular factories is becoming more and more real as we get better at designing and controlling these machines. Imagine manufacturing at the atomic level, building materials and devices from the ground up with crazy accuracy and efficiency.
This is mind-blowing stuff. But with all this power, we need to be careful, right? I mean, releasing tiny robots into our bodies or the environment sounds kind of scary, like something out of a sci-fi movie gone wrong.
I'm glad you brought that up. Safety is super important with any new tech, especially at such a small scale. We need to carefully consider the risks and have safety measures in place. Like, what if these things go haywire? Could they mess with biological systems in ways we don't expect? These are the questions that researchers are working on right now.
It sounds like we need a lot more research before we start seeing these molecular machines in our daily lives.
Absolutely. Rigorous testing and careful ethical considerations are essential in this field. We have to balance the thrill of discovery with the responsibility of making sure these advancements are used safely and ethically. It's not just about scientific progress. It's about making smart choices about how we use that progress.
That's a great point. Science isn't just about discovering new things. It's also about thinking carefully about how those discoveries are used.
Exactly. It has to be a team effort. Scientists, policymakers, and the public all working together. We need to talk openly about the potential benefits and risks and work together to shape a future where this tech makes the world a better place.
Speaking of exploring, what gets you most excited about this field? What really grabs your attention?
You know, what really fascinates me is this idea of blurring the lines between living and non-living things. We're taking cues from nature and using them to create synthetic systems that act like biological processes. It's like closing the loop, merging the natural and the artificial.
Like we're reverse engineering biology, figuring out what makes life tick, and then using that knowledge to build our own versions of life's incredible machines.
And in doing that, who knows? We might unlock secrets that could change not just technology, but our understanding of our place in the universe.
Wow, now that's thinking big.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Well, the potential of these molecular machines is so huge, it's hard not to.
So true. We've gone from these tiny engines to self-healing materials, to cleaning up the atmosphere, to potentially even understanding the origins of life itself. I mean, is there anything these molecular machines can't do? It really does. But let's get back down to Earth for a minute. What are some of the, like, roadblocks in this field? What are researchers struggling with?
Well, one of the big ones is control. We've talked about using things like light or chemical signals to tell these machines what to do, but getting them to do exactly what we want at such a tiny scale, that's a whole other ball game. It's like trying to conduct an orchestra of molecules.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the size too, right?
Right.
We're talking about things a million times smaller than a hair.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even work with something that small?
Exactly. Just getting a grip on these tiny building blocks is incredibly tough. It takes incredibly sophisticated tools and techniques. We're really pushing the limits of what's even possible.
So, like, we need a whole new toolbox, right? Forget wrenches and screwdrivers. We need, like, molecular tweezers and atomic glue.
Uh-huh. That's a great way to put it. And you know what? Scientists are actually developing those very tools. Techniques like atomic force microscopy and, get this, DNA origami, allow us to actually move things around at the atomic level.
DNA origami. Now, that's something I got to hear more about.
It's amazing. They use DNA strands, you know, the stuff that makes up our genes, as building blocks to make structures at the nanoscale. It's like folding a piece of paper into an elaborate origami crane, but instead of paper, we're using DNA molecules. And that lets you create these crazy complex shapes and structures at an unbelievably small scale.
So we're taking, like, the building blocks of life itself and using them to create our own molecular machines. That's just, wow. But okay, let's say we can build these things. How do we know they're safe? Putting tiny robots into our bodies or out in the environment. That sounds a bit like a science fiction nightmare waiting to happen.
You're right to be cautious. Safety is absolutely critical with any new tech, especially something this small. We have to think about the risks. What could go wrong? What if they break down? Could they interact with our bodies in ways we don't expect? These are all things scientists are working on figuring out.
So it sounds like we need a lot more research before we start seeing molecular machines everywhere. It's not quite ready for prime time, huh?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Lots more testing, lots more careful thought about the ethics of it all. We have to balance the excitement of discovery with being responsible about how it's used. It's not just about pushing science forward. It's about making good choices about how we use it.
It's a good reminder that science isn't just about, like, eureka moments. It's about using those discoveries wisely.
Couldn't agree more. It's a conversation we all need to be part of. Scientists, policymakers, everyone, we need to be talking about the potential benefits and risks of this technology and work together to make sure it's used for good.
Well, as we wrap up our deep dive today, I have to say I'm feeling a mix of awe and honestly a little bit of caution. It's clear these molecular machines have the potential to, like, rewrite the rules in so many areas of our lives, but we have to move forward carefully and thoughtfully.
Absolutely. This is powerful stuff. We need to be mindful, but gosh, the possibilities are just so inspiring. Think about it. We're just starting to understand what these tiny machines can do. Who knows what amazing discoveries are just around the corner?
It's pretty mind-blowing and maybe a little scary to think about what the future holds in this field. But one thing's for sure, these molecular machines are going to be a big part of it.
And hey, maybe one of our listeners will be the one to make the next big breakthrough. Wouldn't that be cool?
That's a great thought. All our listeners, keep those brains buzzing. Keep asking questions and never lose that curiosity. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey into the world of molecular machines. It's been a wild ride.